This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
And now, two pigeons who can't believe how good humans have it with DirecTV.
These humans are hopping from streaming apps to live sports without batting a wing.
All from the DirecTV home screen.
With just one click, you could be watching a baseball game, a movie on Netflix,
or a critically acclaimed documentary.
You watch documentaries?
I love the ones that leave you with a question.
What?
Exactly.
DirecTV, a better way to watch whatever you want to watch. Visit DirecTV.com.
Internet-connected Gemini device, separate Netflix membership, and additional paid subscriptions required for third-party apps.
Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herrington deal. Chris Herrington joins me now. Chris, what are you listening to?
That's me and Julio down by the schoolyard. Paul Simon's single from the early 70s. Sometimes a movie claims a song, and to me, the Royal Tenenbaums claim that song, used in the montage sequence in which Gene Hackman's title character takes his grandsons out for a day of hell raising. Shout out to Gene Hackman, one of the all-time greats, who died apparently this morning. America, a little less American today.
Yeah, the there's a New York Post story. It says, not surprisingly, family suspects carbon monoxide poisoning. Gene died at the age, Gene Hackman died at the age of 95. His wife, 64, also their dog. So one of the all-time greats. What did you think of Gene Hackman as an actor?
One of my very favorite actors. He's one of these guys, Walter Matthau's like this too to me, who I also love. He's a guy who seems like he was never young. Like Gene Hackman was like born old. But I think one of the more reliably interesting screen presences we've ever had, like not at all like your typical like leading man type, you know? I mean, he's not a Denzel Washington or a George Clooney or a Cary Grant or whatever. He's a different kind of personality. Sort of fitting that he sort of came of age movie-wise like in the 70s, which was a little bit more of an ornery kind of decade for the movies.
Yeah, the New York Times obit said, great minds think alike, obviously. He was born middle-aged. Seems like he was born middle-aged. Yeah. So, all right, give me your top of the head. Give me top three Gene Hackman films.
So I'm going to cheat and do like that times three a little bit.
Okay.
So I think I have to give you two or three recommendations in three different categories.
Okay, good. That's good.
In terms of like leading roles, because he did a lot of great supporting roles, but in terms of leading roles, that's a little bit more obvious, conventional wisdom, like, you know, must have kind of thing, kind of stuff. I think there's three of those. There's The French Connection, which is a cop movie from the 70s. It's where he won Best Actor at the Oscars. I think that's his only Best Actor win. There's The Conversation, which is sort of a moody, paranoid thriller, Francis Ford Coppola from the 70s. And then there's Hoosiers, which I think everybody knows, you know, where he plays Norman Dale, the basketball coach in the 80s. So those are like the conventional wisdom best lead performances, right?
Let me stop you before we get to the next category, then ask you some questions about those. French Connection, I've never seen. Is it great?
I think so. I haven't seen it in a long time. I think William Friedkin directed that. A famous chase scene. I think it's set in Philadelphia. It was sort of notable because he played a cop that was sort of a, you know, a corrupt, racist, like, you know, it wasn't a conventional like movie hero kind of performance, right? I haven't seen that in a long time. I need to rewatch that. Okay. But yeah, I think that's very good.
And Hoosiers, You like the film?
I do. It's a very satisfying movie as long as you're not put off or you can get past the sort of romanticizing or elevating the, like, crew cut white guys passing seven times before they take, like, a set jump shot kind of vibe to it, you know? You have to sort of internalize that and move on, but it's a very satisfying movie, a very good performance from him.
All right. All right, so that's one category. That's the leading man sort of category, unmistakable. Go ahead. What's the next category?
I think your conventional wisdom must have supporting performances. The other movie he won an Oscar for, I think, was Unforgiven. He sort of plays the bad guy in Unforgiven with Clint Eastwood, like great Clint Eastwood Western in the early 90s. Bonnie and Clyde was sort of his breakthrough role, late 60s, you know, Warren Beatty, Faye Dunaway. He plays Clyde Barrow's brother in that one. And then the movie I'd already mentioned, The Royal Tenenbaums, where he's sort of the title character, but it's really a supporting role in the Wes Anderson sort of family movie. So to me, those are sort of the essential, obvious but essential Gene Hackman supporting roles.
It's unbelievable how much he worked. Like, I'm just like, there were years where he did, I gather, three films, but you've got The Birdcage and Young Frankenstein and The Heist and Crimson Tide and Get Shorty and The Firm and Wyatt Earp and Postcards from the Edge and Reds and The Replacement. I mean, it's just on and on and on. He was incredibly prolific.
Yeah. So let me give you a couple of more off the radar picks. Uh-huh. My sort of, you know, comparatively off the radar lead performance pick is Night Moves, which is Arthur Penn, the same guy who did Bonnie and Clyde, directed that. It's a mid-70s sort of private eye film noir kind of thing.
Uh-huh.
And he plays a former pro football player who's become a private detective. He ends up working this case in the Florida Keys, sort of this moody kind of thriller. Really like him in that. And then a completely different kind of performance as an off-the-radar supporting turn. There's this comedy from about, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago, maybe, called The Heartbreakers. And it stars Sigourney Weaver and Jennifer Love Hewitt as a mother-daughter con artist team.
Uh-huh.
And Gene Hackman plays the tobacco tycoon, who is their latest target. And he is absolutely hysterical every single second he's on the screen in that movie, just chain smoking, encouraging everyone around him to chain smoke, even children. Like, it is unbelievable.
So I read in the obit today, though, that I read that he considers a film called Scarecrow from 1973 his best
him
work.
And Pacino. I have not seen it. Like I was thinking about that, you know, this morning, sort of, what are the Gene Hackman movies I haven't seen? And that's high on the list of ones I need to, I think it's kind of hard to find, but that's one I have not seen.
Yeah. So there you go. And by the way, after he retires, he moves to, he writes three historical novels and he became a sculptor. Now, of course, he probably, you know, he didn't have to, I'm sure his bills were paid, but
right.
That's still, I wouldn't sit down and write three historical novels. And he said, to sum up his life, in the obit, it said he wanted the words to be "he tried," which is pretty good. Yeah. So there you go, Gene Hackman.
I also want to send public condolences to my sister-in-law Stephanie, whose Twitter bio used to read, I don't know if she even still has a Twitter account anymore, but her Twitter bio used to read in total "Gene Hackman fan."
That's good. All right. A little NBA. So the Grizzlies, I don't know if you saw this news this morning, released that they are going to be simulcasting five games on basically, you know, regular or over-the-air WMC in Memphis and then sort of equivalent stations in Nashville and in Knoxville. Five games down the stretch, including the regular season finale and including the Tony Allen jersey retirement game. Do you know what that's about?
I don't. I'm curious because I'm on the road back to Memphis today to get back, you know, for the Knicks game tomorrow night. So I saw the press release that they put out. I haven't had an opportunity to dig into it beyond whatever, you know, the headline there. I have no idea. I wonder, my first thought is this some kind of canary in the coal mine towards, you know, testing this out for some greater future use? I welcome it. I think it's good. I think we've had this thing, and we've talked about this on the show before. There's just this frustration of, like, you have to have 17 different streaming networks. So, like, you're not going to have conventional cable. It's like you have to have 17 different streaming subscriptions to see the stuff you want. And it's a hassle, and like a lot of people sort of going back the other way, like I did with Jeffrey's advice, where I went and got an antenna for my TV so I could, like, you know, watch the Super Bowl and watch the Oscars and watch, like, just normal, like, you know, broadcast television stuff. So I welcome having the opportunity for people to, like, that's what it used to be, like, when the team first moved here, right? It was on whatever, like, Channel 24 or Channel 13 or some local channel, right?
Was it? I don't recall, Jeff.
It was on, like, PAX. WPXA. It was like,
yeah. It was some broadcast.
Yeah, it was, right. It was a local affiliate, but it wasn't, like, the main one.
Well, you may welcome it, Chris, but I don't get the sense the Grizzlies welcome it. Like, it's, they got a check from these regional sports networks, and I think the money is a lot harder to find when you're just putting it out over the air. I mean, Jeffrey had the stat that...
Well, yeah, but why are they doing this then? And I don't know the answer because I haven't had time to talk to anybody.
Right.
Right? Do you have a theory?
No. No, I mean, I think it might be the regional sports work going away.
Yeah, I mean, I think right. Some revenue is better than no revenue.
Yeah. We'll see.
Right.
I'm sure we'll learn more as time goes by.
Well, okay. The other thing that changed recently, and I have not done it this way, but apparently the FanDuel stuff is available via Amazon now. I don't know if that's helpful to people or not.
So that was the plan all along, but it is now. Like, you can.
Have you watched it that way, Jeffrey?
No.
Have you consumed it that way?
No, I'm not.
I haven't either. All right. Onward we go. I'm going to ask you about some more film stuff at the end here of the segment, because yesterday, and I didn't get to it because we were talking about the game, yesterday you had your Oscar predictions and whatnot, so I'm going to get to that here in a moment. But I did listen to the podcast, your podcast with Drew. I would commend anyone to go listen to the podcast Over the Daily Memphian with Drew Hill, and a couple things struck me. One is, Drew was really much more interested in the emotional significance of Ja's performance than you were saying what you've said on here, which is you think he's physically limited in some way. And he was attaching much more significance to the ending that game and the uplift that he might have gotten from it and the vibe stuff. The confidence he talked about. I think that's the way that Drew phrased it. And it wasn't, whatever, you weren't arguing about it, but it was a slight difference in emphasis. I don't know. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, I think that maybe part of it is that Drew was at the game in person and I was not, and like was in the locker room and sort of maybe was a little bit more caught in the moment than I was, which not necessarily to mean his assessment is wrong or mine is right. Just the difference of, like, you know, the impact of that, you know, of the trappings were probably a little bit stronger for him than for me. So that's probably part of it. I mean, I think the vibe stuff matters. I think I've been saying this forever with Ja. I think Ja's mood impacts his game almost more than his game impacts his mood to me. And so I do think it matters. But I think that if you really were watching that game closely, and I'm not saying Drew wasn't, I'm saying if you're watching that game closely and you remember, like, the first half too, I think even when Ja was good late, it wasn't like vintage. It wasn't the Ja who scored 49 against the Jazz in the playoffs or whatever. To me, even him at his best in that game looked like, you know, what I call, like, the 90% version, right? And so right. I think his mood impacts his game, but I don't think his mood can suddenly get 100% of the athleticism back. And so, to me, my expectation is not that Ja is suddenly going to become the absolute tip-top 100% best version of Ja we've ever seen. I'm not convinced that's possible right now, but I think his mood can get him, like, close enough to be good enough for a team that, like, has a better Jaren now and has all this other stuff. And so I think what we saw down the stretch was great, and I think it's something that is replicable. But I think even that was not, you look at the kind of shots he was really getting and how he was getting them, it wasn't like Ja is overwhelming the other team with his athleticism. I just don't think that's there right now.
And then you talked a little bit, obviously this was after Jalen Wells' big performance. And as you had said on this show, and that he'd re-entered the chat, it's also... It has some impact on Vince Williams, right? Like, it is, and you mentioned Vince Williams shooting, and as did Drew. Like, in the end, it doesn't feel like whatever he is going to get back to as he continues to make his return, Vince Williams Jr.,
right?
It doesn't feel like he is going to ascend to a starting lineup spot. I think you both agreed on that he's not going to ascend to a starting lineup spot. And we obviously don't know where he's going to get to offensively, but it's a real question because Jalen Wells is pretty reliable.
Yeah, I mean, the Vince Williams questions, the biggest Vince Williams questions are not dissimilar, I mean, to, at a lower level from the biggest John Morant questions in terms of health and shooting. And Vince, I know it was just listed as a sprained ankle, but, like, there's a vast, like, you know, difference between different levels of sprained ankles. And my sense, and I think Drew's sense, too, is that Vince Williams had a particularly bad sprained ankle, like a really bad one. And it's the kind of thing that he's probably not going to be absolute 100%. Like good as new, maybe until next season. It's good enough that he's playing on it, and he's off. He will, if he's not off a minutes restriction, apparently he will soon be off a minutes restriction. But I don't know if he's going to be able to be the absolute best version of himself physically right now. And then the other question is, no one knows what the real Vince Williams is as a shooter. The only sustained sample we have is last season. It was very good. It was like he took more than 200 threes and hit about like 38% clip, and that's great. And that's a much bigger sample than what he's done this season and at this point, like 8 games, and what he did his rookie season in like a handful of games, and really only one game where he went like 1 of 15 in game 82 or whatever. So you almost want to throw that out. But those 200 attempts is not that big of a sample either, and he does not have like a textbook form, right? To me, when you just watch them shoot, I believe in the Jalen Wells shooting more than the Vince Williams shooting because it looks better. Not only is it going in, but it looks good doing it. And that's not quite true with Vince Williams. And so I'm a big believer in what he is as a disruptor and defender. But there are real questions about like health, durability, and shooting. And I don't think anyone fully knows, you know, where that's headed.
And then another question you all discussed was whether Zach Edey would retain his spot in the starting lineup in the playoffs, even if it's just roll him out there for 5 minutes, or whether he will be deployed more as a matchup-specific weapon. I don't know. Your thoughts on Zach Edey?
Well, if Jalen Wells is going to retain his starting role, and I suspect he will, period, he certainly will for the near future. Like I think, you know, it's a check back in 3 weeks kind of thing with that for me. We'll see if Vince Williams knows sort of where he gets to. But I think there's a good chance Jalen Wells just keeps that spot even on into the playoffs. And if that's the case, are you really starting two rookies in the playoffs? I mean, it just doesn't – I mean, I've written about this earlier. It doesn't really happen. I think no matter what, Zach Edey is going to be like more of a part-time player. He's a part-time player right now as a starter. But he's going to be a part-time player in the playoffs. But how part-time sort of depends on the matchup. I think he's more matchup-dependent than most – than maybe anyone else in the rotation. And right now, we just don't know what that matchup's going to be. You know, if they're playing a team with a big center, you may want him in the starting lineup. If you're playing the Lakers, like, do you even want him starting, you know, right, if he's matching up with Jackson Hayes or Rui Hachimura or whatever? And so it may be that they just do what they're doing now for a while, and then when you get closer to the end game, maybe it changes, maybe it doesn't.
Are you as optimistic about his long-term future as you were before the season began?
I think so, because before the season began, there was a total unknown. Like he could have been a total bust. Some people thought he was going to be. I didn't think that, but some people did. So there was at least an air of mystery there, and he's not that. Like he's already established he's not that. He rebounds at a high level. Like you know, he's done good stuff. And so I feel good about it. I'm not like dead certain about it. But I feel there's a very good chance. It is not a certainty, but there's a very good chance that in short order, Zach Edey will be a quality starting center in the NBA. You know, at the level of like what Jonas was earlier in his career. I think that is there for him. I wouldn't like lock it in, but I think there's a very good chance he becomes that.
All right, back to the world of film. You did your piece where you review what's opening in Memphis this week, and the answer is not much, honestly. Last Breath was the one that was your lead. So I wanted to go to you also, though, in the course of this, because Moonlight, I think it's tonight, is showing at Malco. And so, and it's obviously a former Best Picture. You then, because you were talking about Moonlight, and you would have it on your list of Best Pictures, top 10 Best Pictures ever, you had it at 10. You did go through your list of other best pictures. the best picture, according to you, the best years of our lives, 1946. What is that?
So it's interesting to me that you don't know what that is. I think most people don't know what it is.
Uh-huh.
But in its time, it was an absolute sensation. Like between Gone with the Wind and Titanic, it was like it won like every Oscar. It was an absolute blockbuster. It was a national sensation. It was a real, it was enormously important, like, cultural thing at the time. Huh. And I think, to me, it's on the short list. Like, if I were teaching some college class, like, 10 movies to know your country by, like, it's on the syllabus. To me, you should see that movie before you graduate high school. And at this point, like, no one's seen it. It's from the, I think, 46, is that right?
Yep.
So it's a movie about the aftermath of World War II. It's about soldiers coming home from the war, and it was made in the moment. It's about the moment in which it was made. And it was a colossally, like, it was a major cultural touchstone for the country at the time. And it focuses on three soldiers coming back to the same town. I think it's in Indiana somewhere, some middle American town. And one sort of a middle-aged officer played by Frederick March. And one is a sort of a young adult, 30-something. He'd been a fighter pilot. I think Dick Morrow is the actor. And then one is a young sort of private, a grunt, played by this guy, Harold Russell, who's basically playing a version of himself. And he got two Oscars. He got a supporting actor Oscar, and he got some special Oscar they made up just to recognize him, which had never happened before. And he's a guy who lost both of his hands in the war. And he's there on screen basically playing a version of himself with these mechanical hands. And it's just about, like, how the country reckoned with the aftermath of the war and soldiers coming home. And to me, it's shot by Greg Toland, the cinematographer, did Citizen Kane. And to me, it's a major, major, like, piece of American culture. That is almost been totally forgotten at this point.
Two and three are The Godfather Part Two is two, and The Godfather, the original Godfather, is three. Then Unforgiven.
Yeah, those are pretty good movies.
Those are pretty good movies. Is it consensus that Part Two is better than The Godfather?
It's not. It's not even consensus for me. And it's kind of a hard call, but they're very different movies. Like The Godfather, the first one, is very classical, and Godfather Part Two is a lot more sort of its era. You know, it gets some political intrigue, and then it jumps, you know, time frames, and it's going in the past, and it's a lot more complicated kind of movie. I think they're both go down on a limb here. They're both like super great, but in kind of different ways, even though the one's a sequel to the other.
And then Unforgiven, speaking of Gene Hackman, Rebecca, Casablanca, Schindler's List, Parasite, Annie Hall, and Moonlight is your top 10. So there you go. You can look at Chris's top 10 in the piece that he put up yesterday where he's writing about film in Memphis. But then also you went through your Oscar predictions, and you would have Anora, if you were voting, as the best film, but you think Conclave will win?
So Anora is the favorite, I gather, on like the Amelie sites and stuff. And maybe this is me sort of just like not willing to believe that a movie like Anora could actually win Best Picture, even though like the Oscars have changed a lot. Like movies like Parasite and Moonlight wouldn't even have been nominated 20 years ago when they won. Conclave was the movie that wins Best Picture 20 years ago. But I just have a hard time believing Anora, like a Sean Baker movie, is going to actually win an Oscar, Best Picture. I think Conclave is a well-liked movie that has been very widely seen and is really satisfying. And I just, I don't know. That's my hunch. If you're betting, don't follow my advice. Don't come at me and say, you led me astray and I lost my $20. I'm not here to, I do not have a great track record of this. I'm more interested in what movies are good than what's going to win the awards. But that's my guess, yeah. My guess is an upset that it's Conclave.
Best actress from Anora, Mikey Madison, you believe will win and you think should win.
A lot of people think Demi Moore's going to win. I think Mikey Madison is like the betting favorite or whatever, but I think it's pretty close. A lot of people think Demi Moore will win. I just think The Substance is such a hard movie to watch. I have a hard time believing. But again, this is the Oscars. So like people are voting for stuff they haven't even seen. That's just the way it works. So a lot of people are probably just saying, oh, wouldn't it be a nice story if Demi Moore won an Oscar? Let's vote for her. But no, I'm not watching that movie. I think there's probably a lot of that that's going to happen.
And then Best Actor, Adrian Brody, The Brutalist, is your prediction. Sebastian Stan, he played Donald Trump, right, in The Apprentice?
Yeah.
And you thought he was great.
Yeah, and it's, in some ways, like, Adrian Brody is an enormous role, and he's very good at it. But in some ways, it's like he's being Adrian Brody to a degree.
Right.
Sebastian Stan is not being Sebastian Stan. It's much more of a, like, pure performance kind of thing, and I think actually very good in that movie. The movie is interesting and good, but it's not, it's not a great movie, but it's an interesting movie. I think he is particularly good in it. I love, like, Complete Unknown, and I think Chalamet is great in it for what they ask him to do, but I don't think, like, he might end up winning, that's a chance, but I don't think that's necessarily a great pure acting performance in the way that, like, you know, Adrian Brody is in The Brutalist.
All right, you can read Chris's, you read and wager on Chris's full list of predictions over at the Daily Memphian. You can't wager on it at the Daily Memphian, but anyway, you'll get his predictions there. Thank you, Chris. Safe travels.
Not yet. We're working on it.
Yes, not yet. That's what we need to do, Jeffrey. We need that.
Open a sports book?
Open a sports book over at the Daily Memphian. All of a sudden.
I thought me and you.
Any of our money worries would go away. Not that we had, like, it's a successful nonprofit after these many years, and it's great. And we got basically 40 journalists. But if you could, if you could put together a wager over there, who knows? We might be able to afford 80 journalists, mm-hmm. right? So, all right. We're going to play Writer Than Right Trivia. Jeffrey, what's the fabulous prize?
Jeff, we got 2 tickets to go see Cake. That's April the 18th at Bank Plus Amphitheater.
Now, what are we going to do? There's a phone. Someone's ringing and dialing in already, Jeffrey.
No, that's Chris. I just haven't cleared it.
Oh, okay. 445-0929, 445-0929. We'll take caller number 2. 2 tickets, 445-0929. You just got to play honorably, or best, Jeffrey, if you can. We'll do that next. It's Righter Than Right Trivia on the Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Hey, I'm Andy. If you don't know me, it's probably because I'm not famous. But I did start a men's grooming company called Harry's. The idea for Harry's came out of a frustrating experience I had buying razor blades. Most brands were overpriced, overdesigned, and out of touch. At Harry's, our approach is simple. Here's our secret. We make sharp, durable blades and sell them at honest prices for as low as $2 each. We care about quality so much that we do some crazy things, like buy a world-class German blade factory. Obsessing over every detail means we're confident in offering a 100% quality guarantee. Millions of guys have already made the switch to Harry's, so thank you if you're one of them. And if you're not, we hope you give us a try with this special offer. Get a Harry starter set with a 5-blade razor, weighted handle, shave gel, and a travel cover. All for just $3 plus free shipping. Just go to harrys.com and enter code FLEX at checkout. That's harrys.com, code FLEX. Enjoy.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Do you believe you were wrongfully terminated for speaking up against your employer? Wilshire Law Firm isn't afraid to go up against corporate giants and will protect you every step of the way. Get justice and feel safe. Call the experts at Wilshire Law Firm at 1-800-800-3333.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Joined now by Kevin Cerrito, the impresario of Fun and Games here in Memphis, Tennessee. Kevin, what's happening?
Hey, good morning. Got a special announcement today. We got a new location for Music Bingo starting next week, next Tuesday, at the number one sports bar in DeSoto County. Or at least that's what it's been voted, and I agree with the votes there. The 10th Inning Sports Grill, right next to Snowden. We give away tickets to Snowden Grove quite often on this program. Every Tuesday, we'll be having Music Bingo now in DeSoto County. They're at the 10th Inning Sports Grill right next to Snowden Grove. You can't miss it. Looking forward to starting that this coming Tuesday at 7. And I know, Jeffrey, our contestant today is in DeSoto County, right?
Indeed. Jason in Hernando.
Jason, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
Doing good.
All right, Kevin, I'm going to turn things over to you. All you, Jason, you just got to play honorably. That's what we expect of you. And but if you can knock off Jeffrey, so much the better. Kevin, it's all yours.
All right, this is Righter Than Right Trivia. Your job is to get more right than Jeffrey. You're going to have the choice of two categories. Whatever category you don't choose will automatically be given to Mr. Right over here. And you can steal from him one time and vice versa as you go through the game in the event one of y'all misses a question. So we're going to get started with around the world or around the U.S. Which category would you like, Jason?
Let's go U.S.
U.S. Charleston is the largest city in South Carolina, but it's not the capital. However, Charleston is the capital of what other state?
West Virginia.
That is correct. You're on the board.
All right, a little early pressure on Jeffrey.
We're going around the world, Jeffrey. Finland and Denmark topped the world happiness charts in 2024. With what island nation in the Atlantic happily taking the third spot?
Iceland.
Iceland is correct. Very quick.
We're big on the happiness survey here on the Jeff Calkins Show. We go over it every single year. It's tied at one. Yeah.
We've got skincare or cars?
Cars.
The GMC Yukon is basically the same vehicle as what other GM SUV?
GM. Let's go with Excursion.
Steal.
Whoa,
oh,
Jeffrey.
Man, holy smokes.
I mean, I have a Yukon. The Chevy Tahoe.
The Tahoe is
correct.
The
same?
Yes, the Tahoe and the Yukon are practically the same.
Why'd you get a Yukon instead of a Tahoe?
Because I'm a GMC guy.
Okay. All right, Jeffrey takes a 2-1 lead, and he's up.
Shout out my dad.
Yeah, if you look it up, they have more in common than they have that are different, apparently.
All right,
we're going to
just
skincare for you.
All right, yeah.
Jeffrey.
This is important.
Retinol is a common ingredient in many skincare products and is a form of what letter vitamin?
Skincare, I'll just say D.
That is incorrect. If you have a steal, do you want to guess the letter of the vitamin or you want to save your steal?
I got an idea, but I'm going to save it.
All right. What would you have guessed, Jason?
Vitamin E.
All right. Good thing you didn't use your steel. It was vitamin A. We're looking for vitamin A.
Of course.
The common ingredient in skincare products.
Right.
Known as
2-1. Still 2-1. Jeffrey leads over Jason.
All right. We've got Big Bang Theory or Modern Family?
Well, I watched a little Modern Family, so let's go there.
All right, Modern Family. Which of the following is not a regular character from the show Modern Family? We have A, Manny, B, Barry, C, Haley, or D, Lily.
What was the second one?
Barry.
That's what I'm going with.
It's going with Barry. Let's see. Manny was a character, Lily and Haley. Yes, Barry is correct. You got a point there.
Let's go.
Ties it up at 2. Over to Jeffrey.
Jeffrey, you got Big Bang Theory. According to the Big Bang Theory, the universe... Of course, we're not talking about the TV show here, Jeffrey. According to the Big Bang Theory, the universe was formed approximately how many years ago? A, 65 million years ago. B, 2.5 billion years ago. C, 14 billion years ago, or D, 7 trillion years ago?
All right, read them again.
We have 65 million, 2.5 billion, 14 billion, or 7 trillion. When was the universe formed?
2.5. Oh, the universe.
According to the Big Bang theory.
Not me, not my birthday, Jeffrey. The universe. Was, yeah,
I was thinking the age of the Earth.
The universe formed approximately how many years ago?
All right, so we
would it be the
one
same?
Last time.
65 million.
All right,
that's time. That's enough time.
65 million.
You're not the judge here. Go ahead.
14 billion or 7 trillion?
I'm going to say C.
You're going to say C? Man. 14 billion?
Yeah, if you give him five minutes to look it up.
He's not looking it up. I got my eyes on him the whole time. He did take 65 billion years to answer that question. Did he get it right? I'm sorry?
He got it right. Yes, 14 billion is the correct answer.
That so long ago, I've lost track of the score. I think it's 3-2.
But he has a steal.
All right. Over to Jason.
I was going
to
steal that
one,
too.
The last questions of regulation here. Food or drink?
Food.
Food. Separate from criminal law, what four-letter term that sounds like a kind of food refers to the type of law that seeks to compensate people for civil wrongs? So I'll read to you again. Yes. Separate from criminal law, what four-letter term, four-letter answer, sounds like a kind of food. It refers to the type of law that seeks to compensate people for civil wrongs.
Can I ask Jeff?
Phone a friend. Shockingly, this is one of the few that I know. This is maybe the only one that I know. I do know this.
How much did law school cost?
I'm not going to tell you. It is all not worth it. Mm-hmm. Exactly right. Yes.
So if you'd like, I can repeat the question up to 50 times. That's the Jeffrey rule.
No. That'll help. I'll save that for Jeffrey. Go ahead.
No guesses.
And Jeffrey has a seal. It's tort law. It's tort law. It's like you'd get it at a bakery. Yeah.
T-O-R-T. Torts.
Thanks, professors.
I've heard of it.
Thanks, professors. That's great. Over to Jeffrey.
You might have picked the right category.
On the lead here.
Drink for you, Jeffrey. A fermented honey was one of the first human-made alcoholic beverages and is known by what four-letter name?
Mead.
Quickly gets the correct answer, yes. Yeah, 4-2. M-E-A-D, mead.
4-2. But the game's still up for grabs because I don't think Jason's stolen yet. So the game is 4-2. Jeffrey, let me show me how many you're going to wager. I can see that. Jason, you're going to wager both of yours, I take it?
I guess I will this time.
Okay, there you go. Here we go. Jeffrey's wagering two as well.
Right, the final round today is Black History Month. Tonight is the last trivia night of Black History Month. We got four locations tonight. We will have a Black History round tonight. So a little extra advantage for tuning in here, knowing that that's going to happen. This is a couple of the questions you might hear tonight during that Black History Month round, the last trivia of Black History Month tonight. All right, do you want question A or B?
A.
Question A. Hiram Revels became the first black U.S. senator in 1870, representing what southern state? First black U.S. senator was in 1870, representing what U.S. state? Southern U.S. state.
There's a lot of states. Southern states.
Yeah, this was a southern. It's a southern state, which,
Alabama.
Alabama is not correct, unfortunately. You're not going to be able to win, but you can still win the prize. But the correct answer is, Jeffrey, do you know?
It's one of the Carolinas, I think.
No? Mm-mm.
Oh.
We should know this. It's Mississippi. Mississippi.
That's what I was going to guess.
Sure you were. Okay.
The first black U.S.
Now the score is 4-0. And Jeffrey can build on that lead.
If he loses, then it's a tie, and I still lose.
Oh, that's true. Whatever. You're right. When you're right, you're right. I'm wrong. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's just got to be righter than right. That's what it's all right. But Black History Month is celebrated in February, Jeffrey, because of this is true. The origin story of Black History it's celebrated in February in part because it's Abraham Lincoln's birthday in that month and the birthday of what other abolitionist who was born on Valentine's Day?
Frederick Douglass.
Frederick Douglass is correct.
Looks like you're not going to steal, Jason.
No, not this time.
Nice work. Nice work, though. Jeffrey, do you gauge
Absolutely.
That he played honorably?
And Jason's good,
you
too.
You know what
yeah.
He does a little bit screaming for calls, just like Ja. You know, like he wants the calls, but I think we can give it to him. All right, thanks for calling. We appreciate it. Kevin, where are you going to be? Where can people find out where you're going to be?
We had so much going on. Go streetentertainment.com. We do have Beyonce Bingo happening tonight downtown at Laughlin Yard, celebrating Black History Month and her big win, Album of the Year at the Grammys. We've got trivia happening at four different places, including in South Haven at Dan McGinnis. Jason, you should go check that out there, right there on Goodman Road. We've got an Evergreen Grill in Midtown, Hampline Brewing Company. It's patio season. Great time to go to Hampline and hang out outside there. I'll be at Huey Southwind right there on Winchester asking many of these questions you just heard. You'll hear them tonight at Trivia. You have an advantage, as always, for being a loyal listener to the Jeff Calkins Show here on 92.9 ESPN.
All right. Thanks, Kevin. Appreciate it. We'll talk to you again next week. Ben, I take a break. Back in a moment. Jeff Calkins on 92.9 FM with you. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. We have more news from the Combine, Jeffrey. Well, okay. Yeah, that. First, we do have some Abdul Carter, who we talked about earlier, has the stress fracture in his foot. Drew Rosenhaus has said that doctors have advised against surgery and that he will work out at his pro day, and it's going to be a non-factor. So there you go. Whatever. An agent saying that. But it does appear, at least now, he intends to work out at his pro day. But in other news, Jeffrey, we have a scrap at the Combine between?
Jeff, according to Pro Football Talk, per multiple witnesses or per multiple sources who witnessed the interaction, Jordan Schultz of Fox and Yahoo Sports and Ian Rappaport of NFL Media engaged in a verbal altercation on Wednesday afternoon at the Starbucks at the JW Marriott.
So they're all
in
caffeinated and hopped up already.
Correct.
Yes. All right. Tell me what happened.
Schultz, we're told, accosted Rappaport. The fact that it happened in a Starbucks provides an intriguing coincidence. Schultz is the son of former Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz.
I did not
know that either. We're told that Rappaport was talking to an agent. Schultz approached Rappaport and said, "We need to talk," or specific words to that effect. Rappaport replied, "We're told we don't need to talk," or specific words to that effect. Schultz then made accusations about Rappaport, we're told. Rappaport, we're told, regards the accusations as unfounded. The two men were essentially face-to-face. I think probably face-to-chest, because Rappaport's my size, Jordan's not. "If you have anything to say to me, quote, say it to my effing face," Schultz said.
Schultz said that. It's a weird thing, because it was Schultz who approached Rappaport.
Correct.
So it's Schultz thing, "If you ever have anything to say it to my face."
Correct. "If this continues, we're going to have an effing problem."
Okay, here we go. Go ahead, keep going.
Rappaport then asked Schultz to step back. Quote, "If this happens again, we're going to have an effing problem," Schultz said. "Now I'll step back." The incident was reported to NFL security, and NFL security has taken statements from multiple witnesses. Rappaport declined to comment on the situation. Schultz told PFT this via the text message, "It really isn't anything too much. Ian Rappaport and I had a verbal confrontation. It lasted a little over a minute. Multiple agents and reporters were nearby. Rappaport was the one who called security shortly thereafter, but it never escalated further."
Okay, so what happened here? I think if for context clues, Schultz went to approach Rappaport, and that's where this thing started. Rappaport didn't want... The key friends was, "If you have anything to say about me or to me, say it to my face." So he thought, or had reason to believe, or did believe, that Rappaport was trashing him.
Correct.
Basically.
Matthew Stafford report that he was meeting with Brady.
Whose report was that?
Schultz.
Schultz had the report that Matthew Stafford was skiing in Montana.
Correct.
And bumped into Brady, quote unquote, unintentionally. It was Rappaport who, when he tweeted back, said it was totally unintentional. It wasn't a meeting. They just happened to meet. That's what this was about.
And I assume also, though, I would imagine Rappaport's downplaying it because the Raiders want it downplayed. I would imagine Brady's not open.
No. Rappaport. So Schultz, what was Schultz's report? That they met?
They met.
Okay. And so then Rappaport's was they met. Just but happened to bump into each other.
It's like a recruiting, the old bump rule.
Yeah, the old bump into each other. And so that is disparaging. And so Rappaport is acting upon Raiders' instructions to say this was freaking accidental. And let's be honest, it wasn't. I hate to say it. I think Jordan Schultz has the high ground here.
What an unbelievable coincidence to see you right
in
here.
Montana.
How about that, huh?
Skiing in February. Combine week. Yeah. Whoever would have imagined.
I can't believe you're here.
Now, what do you think about the calling security move, though? Is that a D move?
I probably would have let it go.
I think that's a D move there.
It's very chicken-ass in my estimation.
Other news, the media members already worked into a tizzy over this, are now in a tizzy because Cam Ward and Shedeur Sanders are going to talk simultaneously at different places.
Hate that.
So you can't be at both. Why would they do that? That does seem kind of stupid.
I think Deion's trying to find out who believes.
Separate the sheep from the goats, baby. Mm-hmm. All right, what's coming up next?
Here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Drew Hill joins their program today. Eric and Jason Smith will join us on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jeff will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. We'll be back tomorrow for Now Work Is Done.
StreetEasy asked former New Yorkers if there's anything they miss about life in New York City.
Let me put it this way. House with a home theater sounds appealing. But that's until you realize you no longer have a theater district.
Whether you're looking to rent or it's time to buy, StreetEasy has the local expertise you need to never leave NYC. Go to StreetEasy.com to learn more. StreetEasy is an assumed name of Zillow Inc., which has licenses in all 50 states.
Low-carb keto yo-yo diets, GLP-1 injections, but you're never going to lose weight if your liver is clogged with fat. So what can you do? It's simple. Almased. Almased is a natural superfood protein shake that uses natural amino acids and bioactive peptides to help unclog your liver and optimize your metabolism so it's easier to lose weight. And it's been scientifically proven to preserve muscle mass. Join millions who have transformed their lives with Almased. Find out more and see the university studies at almased.com. That's almased.com.
The PGA Tour is all systems go, and so is the new show, Early Wedge, on the CBS Sports Podcast Network. Join Sportsline experts Sia Nejad, Mike McClure, and Eric Cohen alongside myself, Rick Gaiman, Patrick McDonald, and Jason Sobel. Five times per week, the Early Wedge provides the best information for DFS lineups, outright selections, and so much more. Follow and listen to Early Wedge in the Early Edge feed on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.